This is the Antique Auction Podcast. I'm Martin Willis.
And I'm Phyllis Gall. And this is one of many informative and fun shows we plan to do on arts, antiques, collecting, you name it.
All that stuff.
All that stuff.
And tonight we are at the house and studio of Mark Stock, a fantastic painter.
Wonderful.
And wonderful painter. And we're surrounded by all these amazing paintings. His ceiling goes up probably like 20 feet with all these life-size paintings.
That he did,
yes. And hello, Mark.
Martin, Phyllis, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And we just had this wonderful evening when we came here. Not only is Mark a fantastic artist, but he's a magician.
Oh, my God, so amazing.
It's amazing what he can do.
So amazing.
So a lot of times... what I think about when I think about artwork and things like that, when I'm looking at a painting, I always wonder about an artist. And, you know, Mark is quite an amazing person. And that's why we wanted to do the show with Mark, because there's a lot going on with Mark.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, you started, why don't you give us a little background? How did you, this a little bit I know of you, you started actually painting late, but you were worked with prints let's just talk about, was it you were born in Florida, right?
No, I was born in Frankfurt, Germany.
That's right.
And my
Sorry.
Father was a military. I was a military brat and born in Germany. Came back to the States. And
did you move around everywhere?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We were in Colorado. We were in Texas, Alabama, all over.
Okay.
So it was tough as a child.
Yeah.
You know, moving around school to school and
uprooting.
And I was a really terrible student. I was awful. I mean, I'm just saying, I had drawing, and that's my strong point, the art. But and I think moving around kind of hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did most of my work living in Florida, and went to St. Pete Junior College, studied art, and transferred to the University of South Florida in Tampa. And continued, and that's when I started working as a printmaker.
And as a printmaker, you actually met a few artists, and we did some pretty amazing prints, actually, right?
Well, as a student, I was a very serious printmaker. I was doing prints to sell them. I was thinking at that point, I was thinking, maybe I can sell these prints. So I was really making art. It wasn't like doing, let's try an experiment with washes on a stone and see how... I was there to make art and to sell art. So at the early age, I said, I'm going to be an artist. And I excelled as a printmaker. And I got a call from Gemini Gel, which is one of the major printmaking houses in the world, actually. They're in Los Angeles, and they hired me from Tampa.
Oh, wow.
To be one of their printers.
Now, how did they hire you from Tampa? Was it through recommendation?
Recommendation. The dean of the College of Fine Arts recommended me. They called him up and asked him if he knew somebody who could be a printer.
Amazing.
And I got recommended and hired on the telephone.
Wow.
So you just uprooted. How old were you then?
I was 25.
25, and you just uprooted and moved right to L.A. directly?
I was going to print for Jasper Johns, Robert Rauschenberg.
Oh, my God.
Roy Lichtenstein, David Hockney. I mean, here I was driving across America in my VW, heading to this place, also knowing that not only was I going to meet these guys and print for them, but I was going to receive a print. After every edition, the printer gets a print. So I thought, man, this collection I'm going to have, which I did get.
Yeah, I see a few around here. It's pretty amazing. So,
and you still have all these prints?
Well, I've sold a few, but yeah. I kept a lot of them.
So how long were you, with that company?
I was with Gemini for 3 years, and it was tough to leave, because every time I wanted to leave, I would say to another printer, hey, Larry, I'm getting out of here. You know, I want to go. Yeah, but Robert Rauschenberg's showing up next month. It's like, oh, okay, I'll stay for that project. I'll stay for that and get a couple of prints. And every time you want to leave, well, David Hockney's coming next week. It was hard to leave because you're receiving all these prints.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway,
I
finally
left it all.
Tore myself out and said, I'm going to be an artist. I want to do my work. I don't want to just print for their works. I want to do...
All right, while we're on the subject of prints, That's pretty intense, making a print. Are you talking what type of process were these prints?
Lithography.
Okay.
So David Hockney would draw on stone.
Stone lithography. Yeah.
Stone lithography, mm-hmm. printed by hand, mm-hmm. color by color. Mm. Editions weren't real large. They were only like 60 mm-hmm. editions.
So those are pretty valuable.
Very valuable, mm-hmm. yeah, because small editions are all yeah. sold out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still have my printer's proofs, but yeah. they're very valuable.
And what happens to the stone?
Yeah.
Stone gets ground down. They put yeah. another stone on top of it, mm-hmm. and they put this kind of grit. It's called grit, actually. It's like sand, mm-hmm. and you rub the two stones together, and it just sands off the surface.
Yeah, right.
And what's interesting with lithography, which is kind of, it's very romantic because these stones came from Europe. Mm-hmm. How do we know that Picasso didn't use this very mm-hmm. same stone? Mm-hmm. It was 8 inches thick at the time, and now it's 6 inches.
So are you saying they grind the stone down afterwards and then they reuse it?
They reuse it.
How
yeah.
about that?
It's just the surface. So
wow.
It's very romantic.
That is very romantic.
The whole
yeah.
lithography printmaking uh-huh. process. Okay.
So then after that, what was your transition into actually painting?
Well, you know, I showed a lot of my prints. My prints were getting collected at the Brooklyn Museum, the Library of Congress. This is when I was a printmaker. Mm-hmm. So I would be in printmaking shows all over America. Mm. I would submit a print, and I started getting noticed as a printmaker.
Mm-hmm. Now, can we just on this subject right here, how does a printmaker excel over another printmaker? I mean, what would you do differently?
Oh
than?
No, it's my artwork. No, it was my artwork.
Oh, you're talking
yeah,
about your.
I was
artwork.
Doing my own art.
I got it.
Once Jasper Johns would leave, uh-huh. see you, Jasper. I'd pull out my own stone at Gemini.
Okay.
And the other printers, are you kidding me? I'm exhausted. Let's go home. I said, no, I'm going to do my work. And I did my own work.
I
did my own imagery.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And I would submit my artwork to print competitions.
I got it.
So I got this, I got a lot of feedback. I was selling prints. Mm. And then someone said to me, Mark, you'll never be famous. I don't want to use the word famous, but you'll never be known as an artist doing prints. Mm. You've got to paint or sculpt. Mm-hmm. You got to do, that's... And so at that moment, I said, man, I better start painting. And I asked some questions at the art store, and I taught myself to paint. I bought a canvas, rabbit skin glued it, and did my first painting, and I started painting. I sort of kind of taught myself.
So did you ever take lessons with anyone?
No.
You're completely self-taught.
Yeah.
And I hope the listeners will take the time to look at Mark's work. We're going to have, actually, the link to his website is up on our site. And it's quite amazing. Earlier, when Phyllis and I first got here, we were looking at Mark's Trompe l'Oeil work that's coming up in an exhibition. And it's so three-dimensional.
It's so, I mean, when we first walked in, when you opened the door, I just walked right by and I was like, oh, there's, a sketch taped to the wall. But
the tape was
Trompe l'Oeil. Yeah,
tape.
I totally was fooled. Oh, completely fooled.
It's like you're wearing 3D glasses. It's pretty amazing.
Well, thank you.
Perfect. So. Yeah, and it's amazing that you're so self-taught. I mean, your work is so technically demanding. Mm. It's precise to. Yeah.
Well, I think that I had a good teachers for drawing. Mm. You know, in printmaking, I had a great instructor named Theo Wujek, and he was a great draftsman. And drawing on a limestone with a grease pencil, in lithography. The grease pencil is where you draw on a mirror.
Uh-huh.
That's the kind of pencil. It's a grease pencil where you pull the string and you sharpen it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing like drawing on a stone. And I'm just saying I had good background in drawing. And I think that shows in my painting.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
That's the foundation of all perfect. Really good painters.
Yeah.
Good drawing skills.
Mm.
So when you're... When did you get into the... I don't want to jump ahead too far, but when did you decide to get into the narrative work, say, The Butler? Was that, do you want to talk about where your transition was before that? Or?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, when I started painting, I was doing still lifes, kind of still life paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Then I kind of fell in love with the Zeppelin, and I started painting Zeppelins. I did a whole series of Zeppelin paintings. They're large too, and sold some of them. I mean, I just love the romance. Again, sort of like the Titanic, that era that people would fly around
travel
in the Zeppelin. And so then,
Those are better days.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys
the air, they call them airships.
Yeah,
too,
airships. Right. Mm-hmm. Then I've always, when I was at the USF, University of South Florida in Tampa, I took a class, and the class was on chaplain. Mm-hmm. And the counselor that said, take this class, he said, all you got to do is watch movies for 4 hours. It's being taught by Harry Hurwitz, a filmmaker from New York. Mm. And just watch movies.
Right.
There's no test. Huh. I thought, oh, this is for me. It's such a bad student I was.
Right.
So I took the class thinking it would just be an easy class. And I connected so well. My soul, as many people's souls, connected with chaplain. Mm. This lonely fellow, maybe I found myself him, you know, mm-hmm. I was looking at myself when I watched him. But of course, that's how we fall in love with movies,
right.
We see ourselves. And anyway, I just went nuts over Chaplin and his work and the pathos, the feelings that provoked from that little character.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I want to come up, I want to start painting images of people in situations where they're hoping for love, looking for love, or perhaps guilt out of a murder that was committed. I want people to look at my paintings and instantly get it. Mm-hmm. I don't care it's that accessible. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted. I wanted like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go to a movie, you get basically paintings like silent film.
Mm-hmm.
It's silent film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in my mind, you look, especially my paintings,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's done in silence. There's no words. It's a story. Narrative painting I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Narrative
mm-hmm.
painting. It's a. There's a little movie going on here.
Yeah.
And you just saw one scene of the law. What something happened before this moment, and something's going to happen after.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought about Chaplin. I thought, I want to come up with a character like the tramp that's universal,
mm-hmm.
that everyone understands. And I thought, the butler. And probably I was going to, and when I was in L.A., I was going to all these Hollywood movies,
uh-huh.
old movies, you know.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so I was always at the old movie theater watching these vintage films from the 40s and 30s. And probably the butler was in my mind for one of these movies. And so I thought, the butler is in love with the woman of the house, but he can't have her because he's the servant. That's Chaplin-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning of painting my first butler.
Wow, and that has done very well for you, actually.
Yeah, it's sort of, a lot of people know me from that
yeah.
series of paintings.
That's before I'd heard your name,
yeah.
I saw
really, yeah.
that,
yeah, uh-huh.
hanging in a home,
yeah,
in San Francisco, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of your, I'm sure you're aware of this, but there's, if you ever go on eBay, there's a ton of prints of the butler on eBay.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, there's a lot
yeah.
of them. Yeah,
it's so. I mean, it's so evocative. It's so, yeah. I mean, it really moves you.
Yeah.
I want you to tell, if you don't mind, I want you to tell the story you told me about Bix and the 2 weeks and all that, about that show, the whole thing. This is your most famous painting. What you're known for?
Right. That's at Bix Restaurant in San Francisco.
Yes.
About how it got there.
About how?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my art dealer from my gallery that I show at San Francisco is called Modernism, and my art dealer is called Martin Muller. And Martin, this is 20 years ago. Imagine 20 years ago. I'm living in L.A. in a big loft downtown, and Martin called me and says, "Mark, I'm throwing a dinner party for my friend Barnaby Conrad. He just wrote a book on absinthe, History in a Bottle."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to throw a black tie dinner at this restaurant called Bix.
Can we just stop?
Sure.
Tell about that liquor first. Can you just a little
oh,
bit?
Oh.
Yeah, absinthe. Well, it was a liquor back in the turn of the century.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Van Gogh drank, Picasso drank, they all drank, and it was sort of a hallucinogenic kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I heard. Yeah.
I've
never tried it.
Well, I've had absinthe. But
yeah.
I thought so.
because now it's a few years ago, like 2 years ago, it was made legal again in the States.
Right.
Yeah. So,
right.
They're in Oakland, Hangar One Distillery, they have really good Epsom.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, you can buy it now. It's not quite as strong.
And it doesn't make you hallucinate.
It doesn't make you, no, but it's sort of fashionable now.
Yeah, it's really hip right now.
Okay, I'm sorry to take that
No, I'm glad you asked, because I didn't know about it when my art dealer called me up. I didn't know what. So anyway, he clued me in what the drink was and sent me the book, and I looked at it, and basically he said, Mark, I want you at this dinner party. Not only that, I want you to paint a painting for the night. Because I want, I'm taking over the restaurant. It's my restaurant. Why can't I put my own art up? Mm. So I want a painting. I want to put a Mark Stock up. And, you know, we're going to have all the big wigs of San Francisco there. And maybe, you know, we'll sell it.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
Well, I said, okay. And then I said, Martin, I'd already begun the Butler series.
Okay.
And I said, Martin, what about a butler holding an absinthe glass and on the glasses stained lipstick? And he's looking at the... I love the idea. I said, well, let's do it. I said, how big is this thing going to be? He says, I'll call you back. He went to Biggs and called me. It should be around 60 inches by, you know, he measured the wall and said, you know, let's...
That's a big painting.
My goodness.
I said, okay, let's do it. And I quickly got the camera, my camera out with a timer, got my tuxedo and with the glass and put the timer on and took a bunch of photographs. And matter of fact, as we're talking here, if you don't mind, there it is when I finished it.
Oh.
There's a photograph I'm showing of the finished photograph of the painting in LA 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But basically, the painting got done, and they shipped it up to Bick's. They hung it up. And
this is in 2 weeks, right?
I painted it in 2 weeks, you're asking?
Which is amazing.
Yeah. I think it was 2 weeks at most. I asked Martin, when is this party? He said, 2 weeks. I said, 2 weeks. And I could have easily said, I'll forget it.
Yeah. Right.
But I jumped at the opportunity, did the painting, shipped it up. It was wet. They hung it up.
Oh,
I flew up.
Oh, my God.
I went to Sea Lake to get a tuxedo. I didn't have a tuxedo. And I showed up at this party for Barnaby's book. And there was my piece, beautiful up on the wall. It's perfect size because we had those dimensions already. And we were hoping, you know, maybe somebody will buy this painting.
Right.
And that night, Bix bought the painting.
Oh, wow.
And there it is, 20 years, and it's become kind of a legend painting of mine.
Right? Yeah. Well, I went in there with you a few weeks ago, and the painting dominates the room. I mean, you can't walk in that painting without... I mean, you can't walk into that room without that painting.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece.
It's one of those magical rooms, you know, you can... put that painting in another place and it wouldn't have the magic it has.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, they work together. That room and that painting, it's quite nice.
And that's your big deal. I mean, that's
your signature piece.
That's your signature piece.
That's my signature piece, yes.
Yeah. And out of that, there was a film created. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, it's funny. This piece has gotten so much for 20 years. I mean, I got a call from J.J. Abrams, who is the Hollywood mogul in Hollywood, and he called and said he had written a tune about the butler in love.
Really?
Because he's also a magician, too, J.J.
Is that right?
But he's a genius, a filmmaker.
Yeah,
you know?
Big time.
He's the boy wonder of Hollywood now.
Right.
Sort of the new Spielberg. Mm-hmm. But he wrote a tune. On it, he bought a piece, I didn't know this, years ago. And on his own, I didn't ask him to.
He bought one of your paintings, you mean?
I think it was a print, an etching.
Oh, I see.
Oh.
But he just was so turned on, and, you know, so moved by it. He went into his homemade studio and wrote a tune about the butler in love.
That's so wonderful.
And so it was really a nice, it had nothing to do with I needed it, or, you know, he just did it on his own, which was kind of nice that you're that inspired that you would. So he sent me not only him, but David Arquette called and said, that he and Courtney Cox, his wife, were married in San Francisco, and they had their rehearsal dinner at Bick's.
Oh.
And he said he never forgot that painting. I said, well, that's nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. He says, I want to make a movie about the painting. And sure enough, we negotiated. He came up with a 12-minute movie shot in 3D.
Uh-huh. In 3D?
3D. Really? And it takes place at Bick's and as well as a mansion in San Francisco. But it's a nice little narrative about the painting.
Mm.
And that happened last year. So that was another exciting moment for me.
There was even someone directing that I recognized. Who directed that?
David did. David.
Yeah. Oh, David. Okay.
He was in an NA director.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
you know this?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's so perfect. I mean, nice. Like, I think your narrative paintings, they should have, like, you know, paired with a short film or a short story. It's just, it's perfect, you know, something evocative and brief, but, you know, but...
Right, right.
The brevity is, it makes it all the more, I mean, touching. In
Thank
some
you,
way, you know?
Yeah.
Now, you have 25 paintings that you did of this gentleman. Let's talk about...
Well, yeah, that's...
He's quite a dramatic features on this.
One of my subjects for the last 10 years, I met Evgeny Voronin. He's a Ukrainian magician that came to San Francisco in 1999, 2000, and performs at Teatro Zanzani, that's in the city. And I went to the show, and I thought it was great because it was something I've never seen, this kind of European dinner circus. I couldn't believe it. And you're in this tent that's from 1930. It's a great show. If nobody's been, you've got to go see this. It's really terrific. But I saw Voronin, and he's dressed sort of like the butler, but you know, he's in tuxedo.
Right.
And he's a magician, which I've been doing magic for many years.
Right.
I said, oh, this is the magician? Oh, God, he looks like one of my butlers. Guess what? Remember I mentioned Chaplin?
Yeah.
He's silent. He doesn't speak a word the whole night. I thought, who is this guy? he's everything I do. And so anyway, but not only that, he's such a great actor, great performer.
Mm.
And I just went crazy over him like I did Chaplin. I just like couldn't get him. So I went back again to the second show, and I met with him afterwards and shook his hand and asked him if I could paint him.
Mm.
And since then, I've done over 25 paintings of him.
Wow.
And it's one of my favorite subjects.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's so regal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's very regal.
Yeah, that's great.
Tremendous. What you can do in silence, you know? And again, just he's so minimal in his movements. Mm. It's just like he is extraordinary, a performer.
Wow. That painting right there, there's a painting of him with a top hat and a red scarf. It's a beautiful painting. And you see San Francisco in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that on the Bay Bridge? Yeah.
That's the Bay Bridge, and there's the tent. You see the Teatro Zanzani.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, wow.
He's walking across the Bay Bridge towards the East Bay. Maybe coming to visit me. That's
yeah.
I love his facial expression.
Oh, no.
He's
outrageous.
Regal and mischievous and mysterious.
He's from another era. You know.
So tell us a different type of... Now, I mentioned when I first came in here, I love your candles. Mm. The lit candles that Mark Stock does are just amazing. It looks like you could reach and just pick up the candle and light up the house with it. Can you tell us what types of different shows that you've done besides the Trompe L'Oeil?
I've showed at Modernism. That's my main gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And I've showed in other galleries, but Modernism is my main gallery.
What's their website? Do you know?
It's www. Modernism Inc., like Incorporated.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
ModernismINC.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they're right in San Francisco.
Market and Third.
Mm-hmm. Market and Third, uh-huh.
But I've had shows with them. You know, this is the thing. Now, people say, oh, Mark Stock, he paints the butlers. Well, I did butlers, yes, but every time I have a show, I try not to do the butler again.
Right.
I may do reference, like this Trompe L'Oeil show that's coming up. But I painted the Hollywood letters. I love this show.
Oh.
I painted each letter, huge, the H. Like, they were huge letters. My paintings were 9 feet by 7 feet.
Wow.
Just the H. Then the next painting was the O. They're all, the whole gallery is just Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Then I did a painting show about a murder, about a woman who murders her husband.
Ooh,
is that the one with the carpet?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I saw that particular painting.
Oh,
right.
The body rolled in the carpet with the feet sticking up. Or
right. And then she's having a cigarette or a drink
or
something.
Yeah, yeah. Melancholy.
Yeah,
yeah,
she's
melancholy.
Sitting there thinking, and there's a body rolled up in the carpet.
Yeah.
You can see the feet.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to do new shows, new ideas with modernism, and not the butler,
mm-hmm.
because I've kind of done the butler, and I want to move on, of course, but it's nice to have that to go back to.
Yeah.
And,
so when you...
So the candle, I had a candle show.
Yeah. You must take a lot of effort into thinking of what you're going to do next.
The concepts are very... Mm-hmm. Exactly, because you want... It's like a... You know what? It's sort of like... what's your next movie going to be?
Right.
You know, well, I did a Western last time. And, you know, I may want to do a, you know, it's that's what it's like for me when I'm given a show, I think.
Hey, Western. You haven't done that one yet. Cowboy Hats.
Hey.
Cowboy Hats. Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
But I had a show, Teatro Zanzani. I was sort of like, I was there Toulouse-Lautrec. Mm-hmm. I had a whole show of just paintings of Teatro Zanzani, of all the characters that I loved.
Mm.
And I got access to them and photographed them for these paintings because I work from photos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing maybe mention about, because people see the work and they say, God, it's very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I come from, you know, my love for film again.
Mm.
My love for film is looking through a viewfinder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's my movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sketchbook. It's me looking through a viewfinder, getting my friends to dress up as actors, say, I'd love you to be in this painting. Would you like to be in a painting? Yes, I would, Mark. Okay, I want to shoot you at my house with a curtain. You know what I'm saying? I direct this narrative with this one person or two people, and I light them, and I even say action. They even move into it, and then I stop them at the right moment, that moment that's important for me, and then I photograph them. So in a way, I'm making a movie, but the end product is a painting.
Now, there's a very handsome couple, I should say, that I've seen at auctions that I also know were in a poster you did for a film festival. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I was asked by Telluride Film Festival, which was an honor because they've used a lot of famous artists to do their posters.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ed Ruscha did one. I think Jim Dine did a poster. And this is just for your own, to be a part of the festival.
Mm.
And they asked me if I would. So I said, of course, I'd love to do the poster. And so I thought, what am I going to do for Telluride Film Festival? I kept thinking.
And how much in advance time did you have?
They gave me a couple of months.
That's really not that long.
Yeah.
Well, and then I started thinking, well, what about, you know, again, Hitchcock, you know, the whole drama thing. I thought, what about a man stalking a woman, you know, like, but not in a bad way, but he's in love with her. And it's a lot about myself when I don't seem shy now, of course, but when I was young, I was so shy. And it's myself looking at a girl I'm in love with, infatuated with, but there's no way I'm going to go up to her and say hello.
Mm.
Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, it'll be a man outside a movie theater staring at a woman in the movie box, in the ticket booth.
Mm.
She's selling tickets. He's in love with her, and he's staring at her. That's it. Mm-hmm. So I thought, who would be these people? And I just met Michael Gorgian and his girlfriend, Jolie Martin. And I said, you're the perfect couple. So sure enough, I photographed them separately.
Uh-huh.
They weren't together at the time, but used them as my models.
Mm.
And did the painting, and it was a wonderful festival to be at. Say that. Tell you what.
Colorado. Yeah.
Great. Do all of your paintings feature subjects that are actually people? Do you ever paint, you know, people you don't know, or just come up?
No, they're usually
find a random photograph and.
Yeah, no, I don't. They're usually people that I know, people that I see for my play, for my movie, for they're acting for the part. Yeah, it's usually people, just like a director.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for the right person for this feeling I have or this idea. For this one scene from the movie, so to speak.
That's so neat. So.
Now, would it ever help you to actually see the person again when you're working, say, from the photo, or just the photo is fine?
No, I've got it. Once I get the photo, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you know, I'm pretty direct. I paint a painting once. When I finally figure out what the composition is going to be, I paint it once. Takes maybe the day, one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a coat. I let it dry. Let it dry, look at it for a week, and then I go back to it and I start killing it, in a sense, painting it again, the second coat, realizing the dynamics and the colors get more enriched, and it's sort of like second coat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Wow.
So I paint pretty fast.
Yeah,
wow.
You're so prolific. Amazing. Great.
Yeah. Now, I noticed I went a while back when I think a painting of yours came up at auction at one time. It actually did, you know, I got to say, for a living artist, it actually did very well because it wasn't one of your narratives, really. Do you recall the painting that came up at auction? I believe it was a, I want to say there was a musical instrument.
Well, it was a shadow of a harp.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that did come up at auction. Actually went for, you know, it went very, even in the four figures, it was
that's nice.
Several thousand dollars. So
mm-hmm. Great. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you do your shows, have you ever had a show that came along that was like really successful, a lot of sales, or does it just cultivate sales at a later time?
Usually my shows don't sell out. I mean, mm-hmm. I wish they did, but...
Well, rarely does one.
Yeah, well, my Trompe L'Oeil show 4 years ago, and by the way, I'm having this show, another Trompe L'Oeil show that opens November 5th.
At Modernism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But 4 years ago, I had a Trompe L'Oeil show. There's like 26 pieces. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, sold that show out. And
wow.
At the opening, we had 20 of them sold at the opening.
Oh, nice.
They're just red dots everywhere.
That's
you know, it
exciting.
Goes to show you Trompe L'Oeil again. I mean, it's
yeah.
like, it's fun. It's an illusion. It's
yeah.
it's a trickery.
Yeah.
It's, and it's...
And I love how your Trompe L'Oeil also has a narrative. You know, mm-hmm. they're like... It's like looking at someone's boudoir, like
oh, yeah.
what you might post up, your own personal little memos or your own personal souvenir postcard from something.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to, the content, try to make it work, not just do Trompe L'Oeil, just
right.
for Trompe L'Oeil. Bring in things that I love, my mm-hmm. my background. And
now, painting, like, I know that of all the living artists today that you're going to be remembered hundreds and hundreds of years from now. Do you ever think about that? Because I know you'll be in the books and you'll be selling at auction 300 years from now for, you know, $10 million or whatever it is. Do you ever think about, like, does painting give you, what am I trying to say? Do you ever think of that in the future, that people still be enjoying your paintings when you're not around?
I have to say I don't.
You don't think
really
about that?
I don't think about it much.
Yeah.
I think about when I when I die, at that moment, like the year after I die, people clamoring for works because there'll be no more. Let's say.
Yeah, I was going to ask you
that's,
if you could get a key to your townhouse here.
Yeah. That's. Yeah. I don't really think 100 years from now.
Yeah. Well, they'll definitely be. I mean, being in the auction business, you know, I've watched what happens when you know. I mean. I'm not always going to say, I mean, there's plenty of living artists that the work sell for really high, but when an artist, you know, being in the auction business again, we sell a lot of artists that are not here anymore.
Right, right.
And, you know, there's always, you think of it, there's always a limited amount of work that comes up, and I think your paintings are going to be sought after for, you know, hundreds of years.
Thank you. I hope so.
Yeah, it's just absolutely fantastic work. And there's a lot more to Mark Stock than just paintings.
Yes.
We were thrilled to see this amazing magic show. Now, were you doing magic tricks and things like that for all along, for years?
No, you know, when I left Florida and I came to Los Angeles to work at Gemini, mm-hmm. and when I, 10 years after that even, I was 35 years old, and the dean of the college from the University of South Florida, his name is Don Saff, wonderful artist, entrepreneur. He came to visit me. No, I went to Tampa to visit him when I was just visiting family.
Uh-huh.
And we went to dinner together. Now, this is when I'm 35.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he showed me, he said, "Hey, Mark, I got a magic trick to show you." I said, "Magic? You do magic?"
Mm-hmm.
And he did this one trick. And I went... It changed my life. That one trick, I like, at that moment, I said, "Can you do that again?" And he did it again. It was a scarf disappearing. And I said, "You got to be kidding me. Can you do it one more time?" And I think he did it again. I said, I kind of like grabbed his lapels. I said, "You got to teach me this." And he says, "Well, I don't really teach." I said, no, you don't understand. I'm that personality. I'm that kind of guy who will take it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he taught me that night.
Mm.
And from then on, I just started doing magic. Just because, why? At 35 years old, why did I do magic? I always ask. But you know what it is? Why I do magic is to see the thrill and the eye, even the eyes blink of the person I'm doing it to when I catch them.
Uh-huh.
It's the joy of tricking people. Not tricking, I don't mean, but you know what I'm saying? Just It's just, I just
amazing.
Well, I've tried to figure out how you make a card appear across the room when it's not there. And I mean, there's so many things that you can do. I can't understand, you know, how these things work. But however you do it, you're fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you.
So, I mean, you're just as good at that as you are your artwork.
Thank
and
you.
You're a fantastic artist. And, while I'm kissing behind, let's go. You're a musician?
Yeah, I have a jazz trio.
Really?
I'm a drummer.
You are?
Yeah, yeah.
I just started playing the drums.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Jazz?
Well, I haven't, you know, found my niche
yeah.
genre yet, but yeah.
Wow,
I love
great.
Jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're an exceptional golfer.
I'm a golfer, yes. I'm a serious golfer. I've played since I've been, when I was very young, and I was a very good junior golfer in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And several of the kids I played with went on to be pros, and we were all the same. So it's possible I could have gone that route.
Mm-hmm.
But my family didn't have the money to support that.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of have to be kind of a
rich
kid, or you
yeah.
have to have some
rich
kind
crowd.
Of...
Yeah.
But I still play today once a week and practice 3 or 4 days a week to play for that one day. And
wow.
I'm a single handicap, 3. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another one of my passions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, getting back to artwork and things like that. Have you, has the internet changed anything that you do in the art world?
No. For me, no.
No.
In what way? I mean,
as far as sales go, I mean,
sales.
Things like that.
Not really, I don't think. Maybe the gallery would, you know, the gallery, when they sell work, they kind of don't tell me how they sold it. It's possible they've sold some pieces from the internet.
Now, do you have paintings that have sold all over the world that you're
well,
aware of? Or?
Yeah, I mean, Europe, mm-hmm. Nothing in Japan, I don't think. But Europe has bought some paintings.
And how often does it happen where someone walks into Bix and they see your painting in there and they ask?
A lot. It's, well, a lot of people want to buy that painting.
Sure.
You know, these, but...
I wonder what that painting would ever sell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we sold it for...
It wasn't a lot. You told me.
Sold it for 20 years ago. But these people, luckily Bix is on my side and they hand out the business card of Modernism.
Oh.
And so these people go right to the gallery the next day
looking
for a work. So
uh-huh.
it's helped me a lot economically selling work.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and you do commissions as well.
I do. I do commissions. I do
really?
Commission Butler once in a while, not very often. But and I do commission portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I photograph the person.
Mm-hmm.
I photograph them in my mood,
mm-hmm.
sort of like, you know, for example, you know, somebody says, I want you to paint my kid smiling. Well, I'm not going to do a kid smiling. You know, I'm going to do a kid thinking about, it's like asking Richard Avedon to, I want the photograph to be in color. Are you kidding? My works are in black and white.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I do paintings of people, they're sort of my mood.
Mm.
They have to be in my kind of theme.
So you often, I mean, you cast your paintings. You know, you find the story and then you find the actors.
Right.
But if someone commissions a portrait, do you just, like, hang out with them to see what you want them to do?
Sometimes I ask them, now, do you want just a head portrait or would you like to be in one of my paintings and one of my stories?
Uh-huh.
For example.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah.
That's,
for example, I had a client that said, I want you to paint all three of my kids in one painting. I thought, oh, gosh, I don't want to do painting of three kids. You know, this is nothing wrong with kids, but I'm not a portrait artist. I'm an art. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought, I said, oh, wait a second. Let's have your kids. One of your kids is performing a magic trick. That she's levitating something off the table. And the other two kids are like astonished watching this. Let's set up a... And they went, we love it!
Cool.
And sure enough, I did this painting of the family, the three kids, and they're in their pajamas, and this one kid's got her hand out, and the milk bottle's floating in the air, and the other two kids... It turned out I had so much fun with that portrait when I thought I didn't want to do it. And
so,
I turned it around to my world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, do you ever do a painting that you really don't want to do and do it anyway, or is it are you always happy when you're doing a painting?
Mostly always happy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really think if I'm doing something I don't really want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it's happened,
mm-hmm.
especially with a portrait, a commission,
mm-hmm.
maybe.
Mm-hmm. But all of the people that you choose to paint are very attractive. If someone unattractive wants you to do a portrait, do you ever enhance it, or do you paint them from the back?
Yeah. Good question, boy.
Paint them from the back.
I don't know. Or do only attractive
people? I think I try to enhance it, maybe possibly.
Yeah. Mm. No, they've been doing that as long as it's been paintbrushes and paint. Yeah. So this has been great. I think we're. How are we doing on time?
I can't really tell.
We don't
edit. We try to keep these somewhere in around the 40-minute range.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But
time flies with Mark Stock, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a very enjoyable time with Mark Stock. And Mark, why don't you throw out your website?
Oh, okay. My website is www.theworldofmarkstock.com.
That's STOCK. And you'll see his links up on our website. And Mark, this has been great.
Thank you, Mark.
Phyllis, so enjoyable.
Great to have you here.
Thank you.
So this is Mark Stock, Phyllis Gow, and Martin Willis signing